Welcome to the Docs Who Lift podcast, where we distill and simplify the complexities of a healthy lifestyle, exercise, medicine, and weight loss. We're excited to bring you a podcast that's a prescription for clinical practice, scientific recommendations, and just real life. This is the Docs Who Lift podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Docs Who Lift podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Spencer, with my co-host, Dr. Carl, Superman endocrinologist. All right, we have our favorite exercise physiologist back, Dr. Lauren. She's back to talk about creatine today. Seeing a lot of hype, seeing a lot of things about creatine. So we're going to get the basics for her to tell us. Small little story. My brother did a project in high school back in
1997, by the way.
97. All about creatine. And his favorite fact was that sperm semen was chock full of creatine, although I don't think there's actually that much. Maybe Dr. Lauren knows that a little bit better. But
that was according to like 90s research.
That was my
90s.
Back in the 90s.
Anyway, welcome back to the podcast. Yeah. If you're like one of everybody's favorite.
Yeah, I got in trouble.
Thank you for having me. Excited to talk creatine.
Very good. All right. So first of all,
what the heck is it?
Yeah. What the heck is creatine anyway?
So I think we need a little energy metabolism review.
Yeah.
So we've all learned about the Krebs cycle and subsequently forgotten it.
Most people probably out there have not maybe learned about it necessarily.
Ultimately, you know, we consume nutrients in a meal, and then we are storing either as lipids or as glycogen in the muscle or in the liver. And then we break down those stores in order to generate ATP. And ATP is always described as the current energy currency of the cell. So it's involved in all activities involving, you know, intracellular communication and when we need like physical energy generated for exercise. So there are slower ways to generate ATP, and that would be through the oxidative pathways. And then there are more efficient ways to generate, and that would be glycolysis or breaking down that glycogen to generate ATP. And then there's the super fast way, which is the phosgene system, which basically when you have ATP, it's broken down into ADP, so it loses one of its phosphate groups, but phosphocreatine can donate it a third phosphagen, so it becomes ATP again. So when we are churning through ATP really rapidly, like we do if we're sprinting or we're lifting really heavy weights and we need that energy as soon as possible, this is a great way to generate it. Because instead of it going through that full cycle which is multi-step of kind of chemical breakdown in order to generate the ATP, which is fine for us just sitting here or us going for a walk or even a light jog, but as intensity ramps up, then we want to recycle that as efficiently and quickly as possible. So phosphocreatine is stored the vast majority in the muscle, and there's maybe 5% of it in the brain, but most of it is stored in the muscle. And for some of us, those stores are not completely full. And so when we supplement with creatine, it's filling up those stores.
Okay.
And
so let me see if
creatine,
I can
amino acid.
It's amino acid. It's a peptide, right?
It's three amino acids.
Three amino acids.
So a small peptide. And so, okay. So as I kind of, again, this going back to the 90s when this was first being, at least that's when I remember it being a thing, you know, especially in sports and we're, you know, lifting weights. And of course, people who had no idea what the heck was going on, they thought it was like an anabolic steroid, which obviously far from that. But you're talking about adenosine triphosphate, ATP, and you talk about how that phosphate it's essentially being used, like you said, as currency energy for like essentially muscle contraction, right? Kind of thing.
I'm trying to
develop a picture for people's minds, and that's kind of what I remember.
So if we think about exchanging currency, so we are traveling with fats or carbohydrates or protein or ketones, and then we need to exchange it for ATP. And so in order to do that, there's like a fast exchange and then there's a longer, slower exchange. But we're always doing this. We're just not always needing to tap into that fast system.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that ultimately, I mean, yeah, we're talking about like muscle contractions though, right?
Okay. And so basically what we're talking about, muscle contractions that require a lot of energy. Mm-hmm. So this is your really short sprint or mm-hmm. your one rep max squat. Like mm-hmm. those are the types of activities where this is going to factor in. So if you're running a marathon, then we're not really maxing out your creatine source mm-hmm. might not assist with that type of performance.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about creatine is, whenever you're looking at ingesting something that is made endogenously, often it doesn't work because it either doesn't survive digestion or it doesn't kind of result in the subsequent step that you would mm-hmm. intend. And creatine supplementation is unique in that it does work. It's really bioavailable. And so it goes like right into the bloodstream and gets stored as phosphocreatine in the muscle.
Yeah.
So as supplements go, it actually does what it's intended to do.
So it's providing that phosphate for when the adenosine triphosphate loses its phosphate and then rapidly provides it so you can be a little bit quicker, stronger, faster in those types of exercise.
Basically go from
that's kind of how I remember sort of describing it. And then so you talk about how, you know, people have creatine. We make it, right? We get it from food and it's stored in our muscles. And you mentioned how, you know, some people don't maybe have enough to optimize that system, and some people do. So here's a statistic I just remember from that 1996 or 97 thing, and it was somewhat practical, I think, in our lives, in that I remember something about maybe 25% of people had enough and maybe wouldn't be the ones to truly benefit from creatine. I don't know if that statistic is still relevant, but I remember thinking because we were all like, or at least a lot of us were trying it because we knew it was safe. We knew it wasn't an anabolic steroid, and we were in high school, and like Spencer always talks about, I was always really strong as a little kid, and through high school, I was a powerlifting state champ. When I took creatine, I never really noticed a benefit. So I always said, I always kind of figured maybe I was part of that 25%. But what is the updated truth to that? Because that may be totally outdated, if there is a truth to it.
I don't know that we have a good statistic on the number of people who could potentially benefit from supplementation. Because, again, if you're not engaging in those activities, then it doesn't really mm-hmm. help you. I mean, we can talk about the preliminary studies in other areas. But, there are true creatine deficiency syndromes that are related to cognitive impairment, but that is a very different sort of set of circumstances than what we're talking about, which is it's going to depend on the type of activity that you're doing and also how much muscle you have, because if you have more muscle mass, then your ability to store is going to be greater than somebody who has a smaller amount of muscle mass. And so that's why we actually see the studies in older women in particular, the benefit isn't as robust as the studies in the younger men.
Oh, interesting.
What can people expect to actually see? Because people are like, everybody should. Now this is one of these, right. You know.
The pendulum swung back again.
It just keeps going back.
And now it's back again.
And people are just making huge claims about everybody should be taking creatine. So my suggestion for patients, like, I don't know if you're going to benefit unless you're like working out and you want to see a few extra reps per set type of thing. Like, what are
So what are the known established benefits? Because there are actually, this is, I always tell people, this is one of the supplements that we know does have efficacy data and it's pretty darn safe. But what are the actual definitive benefits in the literature that have been in the guidelines and stuff that I know we have?
So we're talking about an extra rep and maybe an extra second off your sprint time. And then, of course, those benefits can add up over time. And so in your 12-week study, you might see the group that was supplementing with creatine got a little bit stronger or put on a little bit more muscle mass. But these benefits aren't necessarily something that you would even notice.
Yeah, that's why it's tough. It's tough to know.
So in the
and when we start to look at a lot of the other claims around, cognitive function or Alzheimer's or sleep deprivation, these are being widely misrepresented with people saying, oh, well, it doesn't matter if you're exercising or not. You know, everyone should be taking it for all of these other benefits.
Okay. So who really does benefit from creatine supplementation based upon the current evidence we have? What groups truly get some potential benefit?
People who are engaging in high intensity exercise.
Yeah. This is where we get like our patients. So that's the thing. I was like, look, you can also expect, I don't know if you know the data off the top of your head. I see maybe a little bit of water weight gain from starting at maybe a pound, maybe two at the most. They noticed. Is that normal?
It's normal because it's stored with a water molecule in the cell.
Okay. So yeah, I always tell people, if you're going to start it, you may not notice anything other than maybe you can are a little bit stronger, can do a few more rep or so in with each of your sets, which can then lead to improvement overall in body composition changes, but it's like a cherry on top. And I don't even know if it would be a cherry on top. It might be a little bit less than a cherry on top based on that.
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's a lot of hype around it as if it's going to be this game changer. Mm-hmm. And since those pilot studies came out in these other areas, now it's even more popular because people think, well, it's going to address all of these other issues that I have. And it's not just about the exercise benefit. And I think it's important to say we're really not there yet. You know, there was a study in Alzheimer's patients. I think there were 20 patients and there was no control group. So you're looking at people with existing Alzheimer's and then there's no control. So you don't know if it was actually the effect of creatine or just the effect of an intervention period. It could have been anything.
Or regression.
Then this is being really twisted to say if you supplement with creatine, you're preventing cognitive decline. And that's just way too big of a leap.
Well, yeah,
it's also important because then these people can market it and sell it for more than what it's actually.
Some of these MDs, some really popular MDs, were used that Alzheimer's study last year, and I was like, okay, what is this? There was a pilot study without a control group, so
that's embarrassing.
It was embarrassing to me to have an MD go and hype this up when it's almost like they didn't even read the study, or maybe they don't understand research methodology, which that should be very kind of like,
or they don't care.
That's like, or they don't care and they just want to make
they're just making TikToks
and reels for views, and it's like, what's the point? Why would you, like, there's no point in hyping something up and give people false hope about it. I don't know why people do that.
Yeah, I think it's really irresponsible because it's also just because you're looking at a population that may have a brain creatine deficit, that's very different than treating it like a booster where it's going to be like caffeine and be somehow enhancing, because it's really different if you're coming from a place of deficit versus you already have normal levels and then you're trying to top those up. Often that you wouldn't actually notice any benefit from that. And that's true across the board with all these other areas with treating it, people who are diagnosed with major depressive disorders and they're using creatine in combination with an SSRI or people who are going up full night without sleeping and then doing some kind of cognitive test in the morning. These are really small trials, like 10, 15, 20 people. It's interesting, right? It's an interesting new area of research, but we have a long way to go before we can say, oh, this is actually something everybody should be taking and you'll see some noticeable benefits.
Yeah. Now, of course, you know, because of the benefits in muscle and stuff in the medical world, there's the thought that, well, is it possible that it helps, you know, in the aging, sarcopenia, or frailty? And you kind of alluded to this earlier. And, you know, my thought on that is possibly if they're already really pushing hard on the exercise, the strength training, getting, you know, making sure they're getting enough protein as the next level, and then maybe as the third tier. Are there, what are, you know, what are the basic the data supporting that at this point?
Well, it doesn't build muscle in and of itself. You have mm-hmm. to use it. You have to use the ATP in order to mm-hmm. build muscle. And so I mean, it's the same way that just consuming a whole bunch of protein, you're not necessarily shuttling all of those amino acids and building muscle. And so although, you know, protein in during bed rest or in sedentary people, or creatine during bed rest or sedentary people, they're viable to try. But when we actually look at the data, it's really disappointing because you need the stimulus on the muscle in order to actually end up with meaningful growth or even then, maintenance.
Yeah. And I think I have a feeling it's very similar in the whole, obesity, insulin resistance, type 2 diabetes world that I'm in, of course. And I remember back, like, say, in residency, which is a while back now, I remember, and because I was interested in creatine and all this stuff, I remember some studies saying, hey, there's a hint of glycemic benefit. Now, I'm talking a hint. So if people know what hemoglobin A1Cs are, it was probably like a statistically significant 0.2%. So that's not really that much in our world. However, it was real. And then I think there have been more since then. But do you think it's sort of the same thing? Like if people are doing everything else they're supposed to do, maybe that's where, you know, a hint of benefit possibly if they're working out hard?
That I'm not really familiar with, but I wonder if it's actually the effect of the creatine or if it's the effect of the exercise.
I mean, it's certainly the, you know, it always comes back down to, we talk about the exercise is the most critical thing.
Yeah.
Without that, just like we talk about protein all the time. We have all these people out there, and I think you have been on the show. We've been talking about how much protein do people need, and everyone's trying to sell, you know, women and perimenopausal people, protein and creatine. It almost doesn't matter, because the strength training is the absolute most critical component for muscle growth, retention, et cetera. And the rest of it's kind of maybe some helpfulness, right?
Yeah. And to be clear, there's a wealth of data in creatine and exercise, mm-hmm. but all the papers that show it's actually effective is creatine with exercise, not just right. creatine.
Yeah. That's a key point. That's kind of the bottom line.
Yeah. That's what people always want to take something and have an effect. It's that's why I tell my patient, I'm like, look, it's like you got resistance training, and then distant second is like protein, and then boom, 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 even further is way further is even creatine. So what about the types of creatine?
Oh yeah. That's a good one.
The most studied is creatine monohydrate. And it's also the cheapest. And mm-hmm. so we know it's safe and we know that it's effective. People have tried to push creatine hydrochloride, which is more expensive and less studied, but likely safe as well, although we don't necessarily have the same level of data in that. But it's marketed as more bioavailable. But there's no issue with the bioavailability of creatine monohydrate. So it's trying to come in and solve a problem that doesn't really exist. And we know this with how quickly creatine monohydrate starts working. And so it's measurable in about 2 hours. And so whether you want to take it every day, 3 to 5 grams, something like that, and then until your kind of stores are saturated, which happens in a couple of weeks, maybe 10 days. And then there are people who are trying to load it. And so they'll take, you know, 15 or 20 grams, and then you can get up to that same place a little bit faster. But there's really no need to spend the additional money on the more expensive version that doesn't have as much research behind it. And there wasn't anything wrong with monohydrate to begin with.
Yeah. Now, what about all the new creatines being marketed for women that are basically the same things as the generic creatine monohydrate, but they're in pink packaging and they're twice as much money?
Yeah, they are marketed as, you know, toning. They're often gummies instead of powders. And that's a problem because a lot of those gummy supplements, there was an analysis of the most popular ones sold on Amazon, creatine gummies specifically, and many of them contained no creatine.
Oh, my
God.
Wow.
I would skip the gummies. And the gummy supplements can have problems because they're trying to paint or spray the active ingredient after the fact. And so then you don't even know what the shelf life is. So I would just use the powder. And there is no creatine for women. It's totally a marketing tactic. And often they'll add in some additional ineffective ingredient.
Of course.
What about when to take it?
You can take it anytime. Whether you want to take it in the morning, take it in the evening. It doesn't matter if you take it around exercise because it doesn't work like that, right? It's effective because it's actually saturating the phosphocreatine stores, and then you can use that during exercise. So it's not like caffeine where you would take it as a pre-workout supplement.
I have seen
this caffeine.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. I was going to say, does caffeine hinder the absorption? Because that's what people ask. Well, and I know there were some studies around taking with caffeine versus not. I don't know if that. To me, it doesn't make a difference. But
there were some studies that demonstrated a possible kind of interference, but then subsequent research kind of concluded that it really doesn't matter.
Take it whenever.
Is there anything to taking it after exercise? I feel like that was a somewhat of a common recommendation too. Well, yes, yeah, specifically with carbs, but more of the post-exercise. And again, not that it was a huge recommendation, but I feel like I've even seen that in some like semi-official recommendations that it might be preferable after exercise. Or is that not really, it just doesn't matter?
I mean, and it doesn't really make any sense because It's not like you've depleted all of your stores during a workout and then you need to replenish it. I mean, you could say that with glycogen if you were doing a really glycogen depleting activity. I mean, to some extent, nowhere near to the extent that people pretend. But with creatine, not so much.
Okay. And what are the basic dosing recommendations? And again, this goes way back, the whole loading and all that stuff that's, I think, has been mostly debunked in the research. But what are the basic dosing recommendations for people?
Generally, it's 3 to 5 grams per day. And if you want to load it, you can. You're going to saturate the stores more quickly. But there's no real reason to do that because you get to the same place anyway. And at high doses, people can have some GI issues with creatine.
What was the recent high dose thing, Spencer? There was some.
That's not sleep deprivation. People are drinking 20 grams of this stuff.
I don't think we talked about that online yet. Why don't you talk about
you can go ahead, Dr. Lauren. I pulled up some of the studies here, but if you want to chat about it.
I know the paper that got a lot of press was, I think, 2024, and it was in 15 women. And they were keeping them awake the entire night and then dosing them with creatine and seeing some kind of cognitive responses. And I mean, the high dose creatine, it's possible that we need higher doses for the brain, but there's not even enough evidence that creatine supplementation is making it to the brain. The theory makes sense, right? Because if the vast majority is stored in the muscle, then it's probably going to the muscle first, and then we need to saturate the muscle in order for it to affect brain stores. But this research is really, really preliminary, and it's always small samples because they're doing measurement techniques that are expensive, frankly, and you know, challenging to recruit for. So I think we just need to wait and see, because I don't think that a couple of pilot studies are enough evidence to anticipate a benefit. I mean, I will say creatine is safe, and so I'm less concerned about people taking creatine, you know, unnecessarily instead of taking some of these peptides unnecessarily. But yeah, it's still a choice to take a supplement. It's still money, and it's still your expectations about what you're getting from it.
Well, let's talk about the safety then, some of the historical safety concerns. I mean, I think, you know, people thought it was maybe bad for the kidneys, that, and my historical understanding of that is because we use a marker called creatinine in the blood that helps us estimate basically kidney function, and creatine can somewhat spuriously increase that in the measured labs to some degree. Is that correct? And it's not actually bad for the kidneys. I've never seen anything that said it was bad for kidneys.
Yeah, that's right. And so, but because some people's doctors aren't aware that they're taking creatine, they might be concerned. So it's just important to share that you're taking creatine.
Yeah.
So it's the same reason people with more muscle have higher creatinine levels, and a breakdown product of creatine is creatinine, and it's literally just an estimate. We monitor how well your kidneys filter creatinine, and it gives us an estimate of how well they're working. So just it kind of falsely. Makes it
falsely
look
like your kidneys might be worse than actually they are. So that's just something to be aware of. Share with your doctors. Doctors out there may want to consider checking a cystatin C, which is actually a little bit better estimation of GFR, glomerular filtration rate. And you can actually use them in combination stuff. That's for the clinicians out there. What about some other maybe safety myths that have been out there? Like maybe the dehydration and cramping. We talked about a little bit of water retention. Is there any risk for people when they maybe get dehydrated? Like in our world, wrestling, you know, people are cutting water weight. If they're taking creatine, is that dangerous? Is there a problem with that we are aware of?
I don't see why it would be, but I'm not aware of data that actually looked at that.
People talk about baldness from it. It was in rugby players, however many, like a couple decades ago. And then they've looked at this further, and that doesn't even make any sense, because they were looking at DHT levels. I was just looking it up. It's technically a nitrogenous organic acid, but it is made up of glycine, arginine, and methionine. Kind of interesting. I don't remember that.
The other thing is that I get asked about, because we don't have any data in this, is creatine supplementation during pregnancy or breastfeeding.
Oh, that's interesting.
So that's never been investigated.
Get your baby Jack.
The plausibility of why it would be a problem wouldn't make any sense either. See, that's the thing about this, you know, creatine being so safe, is that it just is really something that's in us. It's hard to overdo it. I don't know.
Food.
And I know a lot of people say, well, we always talk about how just something that's natural doesn't necessarily mean it's good. But the way this is biologically processed and used is just in and of itself innately pretty darn safe. I mean, and kids and adolescents, you know, I think people, just because it's a supplement and a somewhat of a performance enhancing supplement, you know, the one safe, effective one that's out there, you know, it wants to be. Often people want to use it all throughout different stages of life, and that includes kids and adolescents. And there's no reason for concern in that group either, right?
Other than just the general concern about where you're getting your supplements, right? Are they third-party tested? Are you actually getting what you think you're getting? Mm-hmm. So I think whenever we talk about supplements, there's always going to be a little bit of risk there. But to your point, the supplement works remarkably like our endogenous creatine works. And so that it makes it unique, and it makes it safe, and it makes it effective in ways that like ATP supplementation are not, or NAD supplementation are not. So the supplement industry tries all the time to kind of replicate something that is happening in the body. And most supplements don't work because they aren't appropriately mimicking that, or something else goes wrong in the process. And so then the efficacy is lost.
All right. Well, there you have it. What, I don't know what else we, yeah, it's pretty simple. Yeah. Creatine monohydrate, 3 to 5 grams per day. If you're going to do it, you can load, but probably a waste of time. Doesn't matter when you take it. If you want to try to get the cognitive benefits, you can try, but it's a little bit preliminary.
Maybe and I would say overhyped.
Yeah. I would say it's overhyped. I mean, like, certainly I heard somebody overhyped on the diary of a CEO go,
of course,
you can creatine your way out of sleep deprivation. And, you know, as Dr. Lauren said, 15 subjects, maybe a small improvement in some cognitive tests when they are deprived by 21 hours of. So anyway, I would suggest
instead listening to our one of our recent podcasts on sleep optimization and do that instead of trying to out creatine your sleep deprivation.
It doesn't
I also think, how often are people that sleep deprived on a regular basis? Because that would be a really big problem in many ways.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And well, another myth. People often talk about the cycling it like they're taking anabolic steroids or something. Yeah. Is there any type of, you know, where you got to stop it periodically? I don't remember ever seeing any study to suggest that helps anything.
No, I don't know who came up with that one. I mean, it's true that if you stop taking it, if it was beneficial, then, you know, your stores will go back down to baseline, wherever that is for you. But then you're just starting over. Yeah, there's no reason.
No,
it's
reason
not like,
to get it.
I know people will do this with caffeine to kind of resensitize yourself to caffeine. And I mean, that works in the sense that when you start taking it again, you feel really effective. But again, then you become sensitized to it and you're back to that same level. So there's no reason to cycle on and off of it.
That's perfect. Mental.
I love it. Awesome. This is a good little primer. We'll make sure we send it to all our patients. Anybody that is interested in creatine, friends, family, anybody else like that, send them this episode so they don't fall into the hype monster of all the other crazy people online saying you can basically do whatever do crazy stuff while taking creatine, apparently.
And don't spend on the marketing. God.
No pink creatine. Just get the regular.
Good old basics.
Yeah, what are the certifications that show supplements are usually safe or at least guaranteed what's in it? NSF. What else? Dr. Lauren. What's the other ones? I don't know.
I mean,
there's a few certifications.
I usually tell people that, you know, stick with like, you know, really good trusted brand name things, or even trusted, like, say, generic names. I hope this is true. I actually should get both of your opinions. So, for example, around here we have Meijer, you know, big Meijer stores, kind of like Walmart and stuff. And they have these little brands, their own little generic brands of creatine monohydrate. And it's perfect. So that's what I got for my son.
It's probably fine, but I don't know.
I trust Meijer, you know, as a good trusted brand of its own right, and they probably just put in their label on hopefully a good trusted creatine. But yeah, I guess I don't really know.
It gets tested.
Well, I do have one where something else that just came to mind. Creatine degrades pretty rapidly in liquid, so don't put it in a shake and leave it in the fridge overnight and then drink it in the morning.
That's a good point. That's a great point to end with.
And if you have a drink, like, there are these drinks that are marketed with creatine in them. I'm like, that's completely useless.
Yeah. It breaks down. I think it breaks down into creatinine. I thought
that's probably.
Yeah.
It breaks it down. But anyway, thank you so much for coming on, Dr. Lauren. As always, we'll point to your Instagram. We'll probably have you again, probably in the summer at some point, talking about something.
Sooner.
If not, sooner we'll vote.
Happy to come back anytime.
All right. We love
it. Very good, all. Here's our outro.
This podcast is for entertainment and education and information purposes only. Remember, the physicians on this podcast are not your physician. It should not be considered professional or personalized medical advice. It should not be used to replace speaking with your physician or medical professional to discuss your specific health concerns. The topics discussed should not be used solely to diagnose or treat any condition. As a result, we are not responsible for any unwanted medical outcomes. The views and opinions discussed are of those of the host only and do not represent those of any other entities. We'll be right back.